Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tier 6 of the Cryptid Iceberg. Remember how last time I was complaining because a bunch of the guys on that tier were losers? Well, this time we have the opposite problem. There's way too many cool ones on this tier. If I was smart, I would have thought about that before I made the iceberg and more evenly distributed them, but it's too late for that now, so you all just get a cool video. If you've been keeping up with the series, then hopefully some of these creatures are a bit more niche than the monsters we've covered thus far, and if you haven't seen any of the rest of the series, and this is your first video of the Cryptid Iceberg, then cool, you get to hear about 20 really weird things. One thing I want to mention before we get started, because it relates to cryptids and I figure you all probably care about that sort of thing. A while back, I did the Legacy of the Wendigo poster with Invis. It's this really cool poster we did about like the Wendigo above a campfire and blah blah blah, something something, legend, something something, storytelling. Well, you all showed so much support with that drop, and I really do appreciate it, that Invis asked if I'd be willing to do a whole series of cryptids, to which I said yes. And I don't know if I'm supposed to show this to you yet, but I'm going to anyway. Very soon we're gonna have Legacy of the Mothman. I am blown away by the amount of detail and artwork on display here. We have the image of the small town of Point Pleasant and the snow-capped mountains and the searchlights going to like this giant, both like hairy but also insectoid Mothman. It kind of captures like both ends of the spectrum and what people think he looks like, you know, like cuddly creature or creepy monster. And I really couldn't be happier with this. I think it pairs perfectly with the Wendigo one, but even if you don't have the Wendigo one, I think this is a really cool poster on its own. So this is going to drop on the 23rd, I believe, this Tuesday. So in a couple days, I will put an announcement on the community tab, I'll make a tweet about it, whatever. The reason I tell you now is because, just like with the Wendigo poster, I'm going to be signing 100 of these, numbered 1 through 100. I'm going to be signing 100 of these, and after those signed posters are gone, they're gone forever. So if you want in on that, have your notifications ready for Tuesday, and if you want just a normal poster, we're going to be selling this size, the 18 by 24, and also an 11 by 17, I believe. So if you want either one of those, be on the lookout Tuesday, but regardless, I want to say thank you all very much for the support you've shown, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to do stuff like this. The reason I get to make goofy, weird, cryptid videos and weird cryptid posters is because of the support you all have shown, and I don't take that for granted. So thank you all very much for that. Be on the lookout for that April 23rd. Oh yeah, URL will be invis.tv/collection/wendigoon, because I'm stupid. Why didn't I say that before? Enough talking about that creepy monster. Let's get into some other creepy monsters. And if you love stories of things that go bump in the night, you're probably not normal. But what is normal is enjoying fresh, healthy food from today's sponsor, Factor. Factor delivers fresh, never frozen, dietitian-approved meals right to your door. And these delicious, easy-to-make meals means meeting your nutritional goals has never been easier. I understand a lot of us eat unhealthy foods because normally it's the easiest option. But now Factor's here to be so easy that it makes the opposite of that the best option. Yeah. That's because Factor meals can be ready in as little as 2 minutes. And compared to other foods, it is less expensive and way healthier, as all of the meals are made by gourmet chefs and then approved by dietitians. On top of that, their 100% ready to heat and eat meals mean that there's no prep or cleaning work required. You can also get as much or as little Factor as you need, as you can choose between 6 to 18 meals to be delivered each week. And of course, you can pause and reschedule your Factor order at any time. With 35 meal options each week and over 55 add-ons, it's never been easier to get a variety of delicious foods that are also good for you. Factor is now owned by HelloFresh, a company that I've worked with on podcasts and other things I've done on YouTube, and I've got to say I love them just as much then as I do now, and I'm happy to work with them again. Because just like HelloFresh, Factor is committed to giving you healthy, affordable, inexpensive meals delivered straight to your door. So if you're at least slightly sane and want to get in on these delicious, healthy foods, then there's never been a better time to get in on this offer. That's because if you head to factor75.com or click the link below and use code WENDIGOON50, you'll get 50% off your first Factor box and 20% off your next box. That's right, code WENDIGOON50 at factor75.com to get 50% off your first box and 20% off your second while your subscription is active. Don't miss out on this fantastic offer today. Thank you all so much for watching the ad. Thank you so much to Factor for sponsoring the video. It really does mean the most. Hope you all check them out. Link is in the description, and we are back to the video. We are going to go ahead and get into it, but as always, thank you for watching. So if you look at the image of this whole iceberg on tier 6, I goofed. For some reason, I don't know why, I put the Wawasee sturgeon twice on the iceberg when I already talked about it in I think like tier 3 or 4. I guess I was just really excited to talk about that fish. So if you look at the iceberg, the Wawasee sturgeon's on this tier. Just pretend like that doesn't exist, and instead, we're going to talk about the tree squeak. This fearsome critter of North America is said to appear as a normal weasel other than its extra long tail and legs. However, it has the ability to wrap around tree trunks and, like a chameleon, perfectly match the color of wood. Building their homes in the fork of trees, if anything were to disturb the tree squeak as it rests on a log, it would emit a cry, the sound of which is a mimic. The animal's call could not only copy other animals such as elk, dog, or bird, but even gunshots and dynamite. If annoyed by humans, the clever tree squeak may use these sounds in combination to cause people to be lost in the woods as the creature itself was kept invisible by its unique appearance. Many a folktale is centered on this mischievous trickster of the American woodlands. We are already off to a strong start. I absolutely love the fearsome critters. I didn't know about the fearsome critters. Maybe I heard the word before, but I didn't know it was like a whole compendium until I started this series. The Fearsome Critters of North America is some of my favorite cryptid storytelling, because you can so easily picture how stories like this would have been created, how they could have been told around campfires, how they could have been used to scare or haze newcomers to the group. It's similar to things like the Aggro Pelter, right? In Tier 5, we talked about how the Aggro Pelter was an explanation for limbs falling on and killing lumberjacks in the woods. Well, the tree squeak's in the same boat, right? If you've spent any time in the woods, I'm sure there's been an instance where you've heard an animal but not been able to find it. So people sitting around a campfire decide to spin a yarn that it's actually a weasel-looking thing that can just turn the color of a tree and then make different animal noises to taunt you. Not that the creature itself is that menacing, but because of its uniqueness and because it fits into the coziness of campfire stories that I love so much, I've got to give it an A tier. Because ultimately, all I care about is the creature being cool. And if it's cool because it's scary, or it has a menacing appearance, or if you could just make good stories out of it, all the same in my book. Moving on from the tree squeak, next up we have the Glyptodon. These giant armadillos are said to have once roamed the Americas some 11,000 years ago. Reaching 5 feet in height and 2 tons in weight, the Glyptodon dwarfed any modern species of armadillo. Its status as a cryptid began in the 1960s when several accounts of vehicle-sized quadrupeds made their way through South America, culminating in a reported capture of a living Glyptodon in 1967 that was later confirmed to be a hoax. Regardless, the sightings and stories of this gigadillo continue. While it is amusing to think about an armadillo the size of a Volkswagen Beetle, I'm gonna have to give it a D tier. Not F, because admittedly a big armadillo is kind of cool, but once again, it was just a creature that did exist that people say maybe still does exist. And as with everything else down here, I don't care. The tree squeak can become invisible and make dynamite noises. The Glyptodont is an armadillo, but large. So moving on from a cryptid that should have tried harder, we have the cynocephali. Translating to dog-headedness, nearly every culture of the Eastern world holds some legend of humans with the head of a dog. Distinct from werewolves through maintained behavior and some regions describing the beast as a shapeshifter, they were often ascribed to entire groups of people. Many cultures incorporated cynocephali into more common historical beliefs, such as Europeans detailing the creature's encounters with figures such as Jesus Christ. Some attribute the legends to stories of demons, spirits, and the like. Regardless of strangeness, its proliferation across languages is interesting, if not concerning. I'm putting the cynocephali as non-applicable because I'm not really interested in it as a cryptid. If I was, it would probably be like a C or D tier. I'm more interested by its implication. See, I'm sure we're all familiar with at least one example of a dog-headed person in ancient lore, like Anubis from Egyptian mythology. But it's interesting that the concept of a dog-headed person shows up in a lot of different regions. Civilizations like the Egyptians and the Romans had stories of dog-headed people. People in East Asia would say entire tribes of people were dog-headed people. Of course, this was used as a sort of indoctrination to dehumanize the enemy, but still, the symbol persists. The two options are the cool one, that maybe there was either some kind of dog person in humanity's history, or spirits or demons or what have you can appear as a dog-headed person. Or the other option, that one story proliferated through so many cultures and just seemed to work their way into all these different narratives. Both of which says a lot about cryptozoology as a whole. After that, we have an equally important cryptid, Bigfoot. With a naming convention borrowed from the famed Sasquatch, Bigfoot is a half-man, half-pig beast. Some specimens of wild hog are cryptids in their own right, reaching weights in the tons. Bigfoot simply asks how terrifying that creature might be if it sought to harm man, and in some stories, walked upright. Said to stalk the woods of the American Northeast, its stench precedes it, and its imposing figure is used to chase off and potentially kill those who cross its path. Stories of Bigfoot date back to the natives of the land, who referred to the creature as Quintacheck. And to this day, a festival is held not in worship, but reverence of the creature each year. Or at least, so the story goes. So Bigfoot, really big pig, human hybrid thing that wants to kill people. Pretty standard. What isn't standard is what I found while researching this thing. So most of the stories about the legend of Bigfoot come from one source called, and I'm not kidding, Angry Johnny and the Killbillies, which to my understanding is both a website and a band that has a fictional town known as Killville, Massachusetts, and a bunch of different cryptids and urban legends surrounding the fictional town. And while it seems that Bigfoot existed a little bit, like the word was passed around before Angry Johnny did what he did with it, most of the lore you find online seems to come from him. So that's pretty neat, and check out the Killbillies if you want. That being said, D tier. Because yes, while the name is cute and pigs can be scary, it's just really big pig person. Next up, we have the Trinity Alps giant salamander. In the 1920s, several reports of salamanders reaching up to 9 feet in length popped up in the hills of Northern California. While hellbenders, a gargantuan salamander of the eastern United States, can reach massive lengths, some men reported the Trinity Alps salamanders as being as large as a grown alligator, with clusters in the dozens. This culminated in the 1950s when Tom Slick led an expedition to locate the creature, yet nothing was found. Despite this, the occasional sighting and fisherman's tale keeps the story of this record-breaking amphibian alive. I always think it's cool when reports of a cryptid culminate in like an actual investigation. Like Tom Slick was the heir of a huge oil company and was known for going on like cryptozoology missions, I guess, expeditions, whatever you want to call them. And even though they didn't find anything, the fact they went in the first place is pretty cool. And again, hellbenders are really big and kind of scary and do exist. So who's to say something that big can't get a few feet longer? So while there is a lot of real-world stuff around it, and it is one of the more likely cryptids to actually exist on this iceberg, that narrowly saves it from D tier. Because sure, yeah, a lot of validity, whatever, but it's a really big salamander. But you know what isn't a really big salamander? The Hibigon. Also known as the Japanese Bigfoot, this beast can be thought of as an American Bigfoot with slight alterations, such as a height of only 5 feet, an abnormally large head, and a protruding face. As with most Japanese legends, it is particularly terrifying. Not only is the beast described as intelligent and fast, and all encounters note a distinct lack of noise or calls, but some accounts describe the Hibigon as using tools and, rather than attacking humans, simply watching and stalking us. I've talked about it before, the coolest cryptids in the world come from Japan, Brazil, and Appalachia. Japan takes the American Bigfoot, makes it this silent predator that can move through the woods really fast and doesn't necessarily want to kill us, but wants to watch us for some reason and seems to be building something. I would normally call something like this C-tier because no matter how you cut it, it is a Bigfoot derivative. But even though that's true, it does some unique things with the creature, and all the drawings and like renditions of it I've seen are kind of creepy, like it's better at being scary than most Bigfoot depictions. So while I kind of want to call it C-tier because it's not a huge cultural staple, I'm also not Japanese, so I don't know how important it is in Japan or how much of an impact it's had. So I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt and call it B-tier. Because if you're going to rip off another cryptid, at least do something fun with it. I'm looking at you, every American lake monster. And speaking of American lake monsters, next up we have the Oklahoma octopus. Within the landlocked states of Oklahoma, legend exists of an octopus that pulls swimmers to their death. Said to be the size of a horse, the octopus is blamed for the high rates of drowning within several of Oklahoma's man-made lakes. Some species of octopus can survive in fresh water for short periods of time, and with generations of adaptation, a freshwater octopus is theoretically possible. With deaths unexplained and waters ripe with mystery, stories of the Oklahoma octopus are alive and well. The Oklahoma octopus is oddly famous. I remember as a kid seeing a Lost Tape episode about it, and then I just kind of saw it everywhere after that. But all it really is an octopus in Oklahoma. And sure, it's a big octopus, but like, squid get way bigger than that, and to most people, I assume they have the same fear factor associated. So I'm not going to give it F tier because it's not a Nessie clone. At least it's something different, but at the same time, octopus, no need salt. So D tier. I would normally give it bonus points for being so popular, but like I said, it is just an octopus. After that, we have the Glaucus. This fearsome critter is said to stalk the woods of Glastonbury, Connecticut. Described as a lion-bear-panther hybrid, the beast is said to be blind with a perfect sense of hearing and smell. If any look the Glaucus in the eyes, they will immediately lose their memory, explaining why, despite dozens of searches for the creature, few had memory of their encounter. Despite rumors of its existence fading out in the mid-50s, old legends of lost pets and people lead many to believe something once lived, or still lives, out there. I think the premise of the Glaucus is really neat. Granted, the appearance of it is kind of lackluster, it's just taking a bunch of animals that do exist and pushing them together, but the idea that it's blind but can hear and smell really well, so if you can throw it off on one of those, you may have a chance, but if you look it in the eye, you lose your memory. I couldn't find reports to clarify if you lose, like, memory of your whole life or just memory of your encounter. I assume just of the encounter. And like I've talked about with other stories, one of my favorite aspects of cryptids is how you could work them into narratives. So if you were sitting around with your friends and one of them said, well, they've never heard of the Glaucus, ask if they've ever been in the woods by themselves. And you can eventually gaslight them into believing that they not only know of it, but maybe came into contact with it. But because they met its eyes, they simply don't remember. It's a lot of fun. I can't put it in A tier because it isn't that unique in its appearance. But it's certainly a strong B tier. Because, again, if you can make cool stories with it, I'm all for it. And speaking of, next up we have the fur-bearing trout. Truly the jackalope of the water, the fur-bearing trout was a running joke between the fishermen of North America. With origins in Iceland, legend says that in particularly cold climates, trout have adapted to the freezing temperatures by growing a thick layer of fur. This has led to many tall tales and stories of shoes and meat derived from the fish. This fantastical legend finds itself comfortable in the myths of American mythology. All of these Americana, fearsome critters, things that go bump in the night, I can't get enough of. Because the concept of the fur-bearing trout, in and of itself, is teeming with stories. All you gotta do is take a trout taxidermy and put rabbit fur on it and hang it up in your bait and tackle shop, and whenever someone new comes to the area, tell them that you've got fur-bearing trout in the rivers. Or when you have someone over for salmon, tell them that the salmon is that of a fur-bearing trout, and if they really think about it, they can probably taste the difference. Or you could just straight up lie, and if you have like a rabbit pelt thing, just tell people it is a trout pelt thing. I think I even have a fur-bearing trout thing in here somewhere. Yeah, yeah. Check this out. Look at this guy. Tell me that's not neat. Tell me he's not cute. Look at him. He's got his little gray rabbit fur on him. Like, how could you not love that? In one of the tall tales I read, fishermen who go looking for the fur-bearing trout have to bring with them a Brannock device. A Brannock device is the thing at shoe stores that you use to measure your feet for the shoe. And yes, I had to look that up. So normally when you go fishing, there are length requirements for the fish. Like, they don't want you killing young fish that haven't had the chance to reproduce. So the fish has to be a certain length for you to be able to keep it. Well, in the story of the fur-bearing trout, men had to come measure their foot and then put it up next to the trout to prove that the trout could make them an effective pair of shoes. Again, the creature is fun and ripe with stories. I can't call it an A-tier because it's not particularly terrifying and it's not as unique as something like the tree squeaker, but I can certainly call it B-tier where I feel it fits right at home with the jackalope. That might speak to something deeper about me, that some of my favorite cryptids are the ones you can use to trick or gaslight people, but I'm not going to think about that too much right now. And instead, we're just going to move on to the devil bird. Also known as the llama, this bird of Sri Lanka is said to emit a horrific cry, signifying that death was soon to visit. Locals have claimed many different birds to be the actual devil bird, with most ornithologists believing the spot-bellied eagle owl to be the physical match, while the vocal match is most likely the forest eagle owl or the crested honey buzzard. This lack of continuity between sightings leads to a more troubling idea. The concept that, if this devil bird is truly wrought from hell, perhaps it takes the visage and voice of other birds to deliver its message. With origins stooped in the story of a villager driven by madness into the jungle, a demonic minister within the forest of Southeast Asia is enough to make any traveler weary of the trees. So on its own, as a cryptid, I feel like the devil bird is an F tier because, you know, people are like, oh, there's this scary sound in the trees. It's some kind of bird. And then bird people are like, oh, is it that kind of bird? And the person who heard it's like, yeah. Like, they see a bird and say, yeah, that looks like the bird I heard. And they hear another bird and say, that sounds like the bird I heard. So you could make the leap, like I just said, that it mimics the appearance and sounds of different birds. But even then, it's just birds that already exist. However, it is cool that the legend comes from someone that went crazy and was forced to be kind of a messenger from hell. And anytime it crows, it signifies death is soon to visit. And it's also called the devil bird, so I'll call it D tier. But I'm telling you, if the devil wasn't involved in that one, it's going straight to F. And speaking of F tier, spoilers, we have the Cuban critter. While they do in fact hail from Cuba, nothing about these creatures is typical for their environment. In 1948, the critters were spotted near the coast of Cuba and described as being 15 feet tall, covered in hair, and possessing a large crocodile-shaped head. These sightings have been connected to that of the megalonyx, or giant ground sloth, and despite a limited era of reported encounters, some believe this once extinct creature to still inhabit the Cuban jungle. Alright, so like I said, F tier, and I'll tell you why. I'm already not a fan of things that did exist, maybe just existing now. I mean, obviously, it's cool if it really happens, like the coelacanth and stuff like that. We get that. But the concept of, like, oh, a scary monster that goes bump in the night that is just a thing that once existed isn't that interesting to me. And it seems like what happened with the Cuban critter is in 1948, around the time people started talking about these giant ground sloths that used to exist, someone was just like, oh, I saw one of those. And everyone's like, oh, where? And they're like, over there on the beach. And then they go look and they can't find one. And there was one reporting that happened like in the 50s where someone said they spotted one. But then people investigated and it was like a normal sloth that like someone had brought. And they're like, oh, sorry, I thought it was 15 feet tall. My mistake. And it's just like the sightings of it are really dumb. And it's just like for a few years, people who saw the skeletons of the big ground sloth said that they saw one of those, but they couldn't prove it. There's going to be a lot of ground sloth things coming up in the list. I can just feel it because there's so many different cryptids that get attributed to them. So I'm not going to get mad yet, but I can feel it coming on strong. But yeah, for now, F tier. The only good thing I can say about it is the name Cuban Critter is cute. When I read that name originally, I was expecting some kind of little goblin thing, but no, it's just a big sloth. So moving on from that, we have neodinosaurs. Neodinosaurs is a blanket term for cryptids that can be classified as prehistoric dinosaurs still existent in the modern age. Some examples of which we've already discussed, like the Makalei Membe and the Loch Ness Monster. However, they are mentioned now to emphasize the validity of various cryptid sightings. Dinosaurs existed in every corner of the world, and now their sightings continue in their stead. Perhaps the question to be asking among these cryptids is not, do they exist, but do they still exist? Neodinosaurs are going to non-applicable, obviously, as a cryptid. With everything I just explained with the ground sloth, not interested. But it is something to keep in mind that dinosaurs were all over the world, and now several cryptids that appear as dinosaurs, or at least have some similarities, are also being spotted all over the world. Something about the whole false extinction thing that we've talked about earlier to keep in mind with some of these encounters. Especially ones that date back to before the modern era. That maybe it was a creature that existed for a while that may be extinct now, but might not have been then. An example of which we'll talk about right now with the Sucarath. In Patagonia, South America, early European explorers described a very unique encounter. This animal, that would later be called a Sucarath, was described as having a human-like face with a large mane and a long, hairy tail, which it uses to cover the young it carries on its back, the offspring unready to endure the harsh climate. The interesting aspect of this cryptid is that it was never described as such. Instead, documentarians merely mentioned it along with descriptions of other wildlife, detailing the natives which wore their fur and their habit of living near riverbanks. Theorists have pointed at everything from giant anteaters to now extinct sloths as the candidate. The Sucarath is perhaps an example of humanity's encounters with a species in their twilight. Again, potentially a creature that existed then, but just doesn't now. Reports of the Sucarath would have occurred around the late 1500s, early 1600s. And when it says things like the face of a man, it doesn't mean like a man's head on an animal's body. It means more in the way you would describe a chimp's face or something like that. It's flat, it has the features in the same place, not a long snout, etc. And details like it has a tail it uses as a sort of umbrella for the babies on its back is pretty cool. As a cryptid though, I've got to call it a D tier because it's just a kind of unique animal that existed at one point, supposedly, but interesting for its historical context nonetheless. Next up, we have the Bunyip. The Bunyip is one of Australia's most famed cryptids. There isn't a consensus on its appearance, as some describe it as a reptilian dog, and others simply call it a snake with a beard. Bunyip legend dates to the early 1800s, with Aboriginal legends stating that a man named Bunyip ate his totem animal and was cursed to become a spirit, luring passerbys to their watery deaths. With rivers and even the town of Bunyip, Victoria, named after the creature, its impact on culture and history means this legend will continue for generations to come. Australia is interesting because every animal in that country is already trying to kill you, so they have to get creative with their monsters. And the Bunyip does just that. Some of the depictions of it are really weird. It's like a cyclops thing with like fin feet that crawls out of the water and then lures people near the water so it can jump out like a trapdoor spider and kill them. And there's a lot of stories around the creature. Not only its origin, where it was cursed to be a monster like I spoke of, but there's a lot of stories of people out in the outback of Australia who become victim of the creature, or hunting parties that fight one off. Pretty much, it's a good monster, so I'm going to call it B tier. And speaking of things in lakes that want to kill you, we have the Dubarju. The lakes of Ireland tell tale of this gigantic otter. Sometimes described as a dog otter hybrid or just a really big otter up to 7 feet long, the beasts are said to await prey in the water before attacking and even chasing their prey onto land. Sightings have occurred as far back as a tombstone in Glendale, claiming a woman had been killed by a DeBarchu in the 1600s and as recently as 2003, with accounts spotting them near the Omi Island, Connemara. Several stories of battles with the species exist. It makes one think twice before approaching the Irish water's edge. So, on the surface, it's not that unique. It's either a really big otter, like a, you can almost think of it as like a crocodile without the reptilian part, right? Like, it's 7 feet long, and it waits near the water's edge and jumps out and bites people. But there's something about, like, tombstones saying people have been dying for hundreds of years due to these creatures. And in some of the folk tales I read, it's like a man finds his wife ripped in half by one, so he kills it with a pitchfork. There's a lot of fun to be had with the stories around it. So, while I'm not crazy about the cryptid itself, I do like a lot of the folklore attached to it, so I'm going to call it right in the middle at C tier. A lot of good has been done with the concept, but the concept itself isn't anything to write home about. But you know what is a really cool concept? The Sidehill Gouger. Among America's tall tales exists the Sidehill Gouger, a creature that can appear in many variations, but most often resembles a sort of goat or hoofed creature. What they do all have in common is the set of legs on one side of their body is longer than the other. This means that gougers can only walk on hillsides, and specifically in one direction. Leading a gouger off a hillside will result in the animal walking in an awkward circle forever, and the beast is often blamed for stamped trails that circle mountaintops. Rare, since clockwise gougers who give birth to counterclockwise gougers must abandon their young, and if a clockwise meets a counterclockwise, one must kill the other to pass, they find themselves at home in the far-out legends of the American countryside. Once again, these American tall tales have stolen my heart. If you've been out in the woods for any period of time, you can find those game trails whenever you get to the top of an elevation where, like, the local animals will run off from the water has kind of matted out a flat spot near the brim of a mountaintop. And similar to a lot of these other American cryptids, we can see where people saw that and then made a legend around it. It must be a hillside gouger because they have to walk in that same circle, potentially at that same elevation, for their entire lives. And the idea that if a clockwise one gives birth to a counterclockwise, they're just like, they just have to look at each other, and then the mother just has to leave because neither one can turn around to get to the other, so it just sucks. If they run into each other, it is a battle to the death. That is so fun. And there's other fun details, like a clockwise can only mate with a counterclockwise because that's the only way two of them can come into contact with each other. And the way that they migrate is because of their orientation, it is hard for them to couple in order to produce more. So they like lean up on each other and can finally walk in a straight direction. And it takes them a while to get sorted. And that's how they migrate. Two of them will just kind of drunkenly push off of each other until they're in another state. Once again, it is so much fun. You can see where the legend came from. You could see how it could be used for tall tales. I love it. To me, it's a solid A tier for how unique the creature is. It's not an S tier because it doesn't try to attack people and isn't that scary. And also because the shape of it can kind of change depending on which story you're listening to. It doesn't really have a defined form, so I wouldn't call it as cool as something like the Hodag, but pretty cool nonetheless, A tier. Eventually, I'm just going to have to make a video about all of the American tall tales. They exist in like a bunch of pioneer books and stuff like that. You can just read all of them straight from the vine. So I might have to do that one day because I can't get enough. I want them injected into my blood. Speaking of injecting things into your blood, next up we have the Hrokkel. This armor-clad eel is said to exist within the ponds of Iceland. While no longer than a normal eel, it is its propensity for danger that makes it unique. Its scales are incredibly sharp, and its skin secretes a volatile poison. The Hrokkel waits for a victim to step into the pond, whom it then wraps around the leg of and digs to the bone before the target succumbs to the toxins. Legend has it the killer comes from a dead, rotten eel that was forced back to life by magic, and their descendants have haunted the rancid waters of Iceland ever since. I like the Rokul. Its appearance is pretty basic. You know, it's just an eel. But it's fun because it poses a practical danger. People walking through the woods will come across ponds that they can't see clearly through. Better be careful stepping into it because an eel might wrap around your leg and kill you. There's also a lot of fun notes about him. Like the thing I mentioned, the first one came because someone brought back a rotten eel from the dead, and now it's kind of like spiteful and can only exist in unclean waters or whatever. There's also stories that say it's fine to leave sheep around them because their legs are too skinny for the Rokul to get a grip on. So while I would normally call it just an average cryptid, taking an animal, changing some stuff, putting it in a unique place, the stories and tales around it are pretty cool. So I'll call it a B tier. Anything gets bonus points if it makes you think twice about something you already do. Again, like going around puddles. After that, we have Big Hoot. Appalachia, and specifically the Ohio River Valley, hold legend of this massive bird. Big Hoot was first proposed by cryptozoologist Mark Hall, who theorized that the prevalence of Eastern American flying cryptids, such as Mothman and Birdman, could be traced back to one unknown variant of massive owl. Stories of giant owls stealing away prey in the night have permeated Appalachian lore for generations, and their reflective red eyes and distinctive cry could explain various features of other cryptids. Big Hoot proposes that various airborne cryptozoological sightings could simply be that of a really big owl. So earlier in the iceberg, I threw Owlman at F tier because it's just a carbon copy of Mothman. Big Hoot is a little bit different because it's not a new cryptid sighting happening and someone being like, oh, I think this thing that looks like Mothman is a completely different thing than Mothman. Instead, this is a cryptozoologist theorizing that maybe Mothman and other sightings like Mothman are all the same thing. Either Mothman or Big Hoot, as he calls it. Because of that, I'm going to put it at non-applicable, because as a cryptid, it's just a really big owl that's trying to be Mothman, or that looks like Mothman, so it'd be like a D tier or something. But what I think is more interesting is the theory that all of these different cryptids that look similar could be the same thing and have some kind of real-world explanation. We know that birds can get as big as things like an albatross, right? So what if an owl got to a size like that? That would explain the red eyes, that would explain it being predatory, etc. Despite the name being a cute play on Bigfoot, and it is cute, it's a real-world solution to a cryptozoological problem. And again, Big Hoot is just a cute name, so if it's non-applicable, that means I don't have to put it in D tier. After that, we have the Kelpie. One of Scotland's most famous cryptids, the Kelpie is a shapeshifter that entraps those who come into contact with it and drags them to a watery grave. While early legends of the Kelpie depict it as a shapeshifter capable of taking the form of a beautiful woman in order to lure men to the water's edge, it most often appears in the form of a horse. Most often, the horse's beauty and nature compels passerbys to ride it, only to find themselves stuck to the Kelpie's skin as the beast dives into the lake, ready to drown and eat their rider. Stories of the Kelpie killing several people at once, and exorcisms being performed on suspected horses, along with details of fighting them, including crosses and silver bullets, the Kelpie finds itself fit among Europe's monsters. A lot of the old stories of the Kelpie are really fun. Like, there's one popular legend where these 10 children go down to the riverside and see a beautiful horse, and 9 of the kids go up to pet the animal, but one of them's afraid of it and decides to stand back, when suddenly, with all 9 of the children's hands attached to the creature, it dives into the water, none of them ever being seen again. There's another variant of the tale where the kids finally coax the 10th child to come up and pet the horse, and as soon as he does, the horse starts to make its way into the water, and in an act of desperation, the 10th child cuts off his own hand before watching his hand and the 9 kids plunge to the depths. The Kelpie makes its way into a lot of media and things regarding Irish folklore. And then just the idea that in like the 17, 1800s, they thought Kelpies were like demonic, so priests would perform exorcisms on horses that they thought were a Kelpie. Or the idea of men being armed with silver and crosses to defeat any pretty horse they see without a rider is just funny. Also, the whole idea of being compelled to ride a horse was much more relatable back then than it is now, because horses were the only means of travel, right? And, you know, pretty much everyone had one. So if you were out in the woods and you saw a beautiful horse, that is something that is good for transit and also probably worth a lot of money. So that explains why random people would be compelled to ride them. Doesn't really hit the same now, though, because I've never met someone who's like driving down the road and sees a horse and they're like, I have to ride it. Even though design-wise the creature is just a horse, I think it's cool how it can be used in stories, and a lot of interesting things have been done with it historically and through folklore. So I think it's a solid B tier. And then finally, for tier 6, we have a weird one, the Grootslang. Dutch for big snake, the Grootslang is said to inhabit a cave in Richtersveld, South Africa. It is, and I'm not kidding, a huge snake with the head of an elephant. The story goes that when the gods first created the world, they made a creature too strong and too smart. They split this creation into two creatures, the elephant and the serpent. But one of these original inventions escaped, driven to the earth's depths to hide from the gods and reproduce in spite of its creators. Its offspring make their way into the sea through underground caves, and the original beast guards the countless gems and diamonds within the cave known as the Bottomless Pit. The size and unique nature of this legend ensures the Grootslang will haunt explorers and locals for years to come. The Grootslang is so weird, and I kind of love it. For one, that origin story, pretty cool, right? And not only is the beast itself terrifying given its massive proportions, but the way that it guards the diamonds of Africa is interesting. And I'm kind of surprised I haven't heard it brought up in any narratives around African diamond mining. Because with all the controversy around it, you would think someone would use this creature forgotten by time at the bottom of a cave, guarding the diamonds and gems that men desperately tried to get a hold of, would be used for some kind of symbolism, or at least naming convention. I don't know, I just feel like the Grootslang is an interesting creature for that, and I've never heard of it before. I could just be dumb, and maybe it's used all the time for stuff like that, and I'm just stupid, in which case disregard this, but I think it's interesting. Now that being said, as an actual cryptid, yes, it's very weird in that it's a giant elephant snake thing, but aside from its origin, it feels kind of messy, like, oh, there was only one of them, but there's actually a lot of them because it reproduced, and they're in the ocean too, but also this one cave, but maybe other caves too. It's got a lot of qualities dragging it up and also a lot dragging it down, so I'm going to call it right in the middle at C tier. Pretty weird, but pretty cool. So it's par for the course. And with that, we have the end of tier 6. Like I said, there were a lot of really cool ones this time. Should have spaced that out, but too late now. A lot of fun ones today, and hopefully one of these was new to you. And if so, that's pretty cool, and I'm glad I could share that with you, and I just want to say thank you for watching. I hope the trend kind of keeps up. Looking ahead at the next few tiers, I think it does, with some really unique ones, or these fearsome critters that I'm now obsessed with that do cool things and not a lot of people know about. So I hope we get to talk about more of those. It's fun to talk about the popular ones like, you know, the Wendigo and Mothman and whatnot, but what I really like doing is talking about ones you probably haven't heard of before, because it's always fun to learn about something new, right? Especially when it comes to these things that go bump in the night. I think they're pretty cool, and hopefully you do too, and thank you for sticking around this long in the video. I'm gonna get editing on this, so hopefully you could see it. As I mentioned, the Legacy of the Mothman poster will be available in a couple days, so stay tuned for an announcement about that. 100 of them will be signed, and then once that 100 is sold out, can't get it anymore, and once the pre-sale on this is over, which I think will be like a couple weeks or something, they're gone forever, so get it while you can. Should be available in a couple days from when this video goes up. Again, thank you all for the support you've shown me. I remember back when I first started YouTube, I was trying to do like just these print on demand t-shirts and stuff like that. And I'm really happy that now I have an audience and connections I've made in the industry that allow me to make stuff that I think you all deserve and stuff that I would actually want to wear and sell. Like these weird posters, like the cool designs for hoodies and t-shirts and whatever I've been able to do through companies. It really does mean the world. And once again, I know that's all thanks to you all and I appreciate it. So if you went on that, be ready in a couple days. Other than that, I hope you enjoyed the Cryptid Iceberg. Another part will be out for it next month, I'm sure. There's a couple other, at least one other video I know I want to get out before then that should be out before the end of the month. But there's a couple I want to try to get out before the next cryptid one. So we'll see how that goes. Will I overpromise and underdeliver? Probably, but at least it won't be new for the channel. But for real, thank you guys so much for being here. It means the most. Hope you enjoyed. And I believe that should do it for now. But I just want to say thank you for watching. I hope that you enjoyed. And I will see you in the next one.